I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight's terrifying video is about a oil field worker who has to take a detour back to his house because the road mysteriously is blocked off by these men in black uniforms, which don't quite look military through his eyes. When he takes this detour, that is when all hell breaks loose. And if you haven't figured out by now, we are back in Ohio at Barron County. Now let's get spooky. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. They'll never tell you about the war. It'll never appear on the news or in the history books. No countries will petition our case in the UN. We'll never get any aid supplies or vast shipments of weaponry from the government. I doubt the internet will even notice my little post. But I figure it's worth a shot. At least someone out there might find it and try to do something, even if that something is coming down to pick up all the bones once it's over. I suppose by then you won't be able to recognize any of this. That's okay. Just dump us in a pit together and make sure someone other than the government gets to inherit our stuff. I'm not trying to be tough or melodramatic, just honest. My name is Ethan Sanderson. Right now, I'm sitting around the fire with the others, shoveling down a bowl of unsweetened oatmeal, and typing this while I have time. To think my world was sane only a few hours ago. Everything normal obliterated in just over 60 awful minutes. There's no way I'll ever get back to my old job. Not with the roadblocks during the day and the attacks at night. Nope. I'm here to stay. And so I figure I may as well share my story while this bout of decent cell service lasts. It all started when I was driving home from another round of the night shift at the Brighton Smith Petroleum Refinery, tired, covered in grease, and ready for a hot meal before bed. The radio crackled, auto-skimming through various channels, looking for anything other than twangy country music, self-pitying pop songs, or yet another news report yammering on about how close we were getting to nuclear war with the Russians. My truck's engine rumbled with a comforting, quiet regularity, and I let myself smile in pride at that. One thing I can do, and that's getting an engine running smooth as silk.
As an only child, with my father dying from lung cancer when I was 15, and my mother hooked on drugs since I was 12, I'd been on my own for most of my life. Engines had been the one thing I excelled at, school being my nemesis. And after I had fixed up an old F-150 bound for the scrapyard, I had took the first oil rig job I could find and left town. I had done well for myself, staying away from the dealers that had wrecked my mom's life, and accumulated enough money to buy a camper, several firearms, and a little solar power setup that allowed me to travel all over the country in relative comfort. Despite never having gone to college, I considered myself successful, and if I ever found a woman who didn't mind the grease on my overalls and wasn't a total lunatic, maybe I'd settle down and have kids of my own. Whatever the case, I swore to myself I'd be a better parent than either of mine had been. No cigarettes, no meth, and no throwing chairs when I got angry. My thoughts were shattered at the sight of several white and orange plastic barricades stretched across the cracked asphalt, completely blocking my path. Behind them, two massive slate-gray trucks were parked nose-to-nose across the roadway. Just in case someone did get the bright idea of pushing past the flimsy obstructions. Five men dressed in similar gray uniforms and carrying shiny black rifles stood at the roadblock, with two more perched in the turrets of the armored trucks, manning belt-fed machine guns. I hadn't seen any signs of warning of construction, and never a road crew with armored vehicles, which made something sour twist in the pit of my stomach. As a ghetto kid from Pittsburgh, I'd learned to know that I was in a bad area, and this was all kinds of bad. Look at Barron County trying to be Chicago. I grunted to myself and slowed to a stop in front of the barricades, waiting for the nearest soldier to walk up to my driver's side window. He approached, rifle at low ready, and I noted the automatic switch on its receiver. Nope, these guys weren't regular civilians out for the LARP. You need serious cash to have that kind of firepower, which meant I had to be dealing with some branch of our murky federal government. Just stay calm. You've got nothing to hide, and you've done nothing wrong. Play it cool. Hey, man. I put on a friendly smile, scratching at my beard and pointing at the roadblock. Is there some kind of accident up ahead? Train derailment. From behind his dark face mask, the soldier casually threw out what must have been a predetermined lie, because I knew there was no railroad line near this stretch of the road. A real bad one, I'm afraid. We've been tasked to keep all the civilians out of the area until it's all clear. Which way you headed? He seemed friendly enough, confident and relaxed, though I noted the beginnings of a tattoo that poked from under his uniform sleeve. Rangers lead the way. Something prickled in the back of my mind. A low warning that had saved me from many a muggings in my younger days. These guys weren't local. They didn't have any identifying patches or marks on their vehicles. And with how nice this gear looked, they weren't here as part of some hazmat team. Besides, if they were so hellbent on keeping people out, then why was one of the machine gunners facing the road behind them, as if waiting for someone to try and escape their ring of steel? Collingswood. I rested my elbow on the truck window and jerked a thumb back towards the way I'd come. I work at the oil refinery up the road. You guys military? The soldier chuckled and shrugged. Once upon a time, my dude. We're with the cleanup teams providing security. Like I said, there's some bad stuff down this road. Don't want people tracking through it and getting sick. Interesting timing. I hadn't even heard about any accident, and yet there's already a cordon? Never saw the government move so fast. Oh, gotcha. I played along, and eyed the rest of them for any symbols that might tell me just who I was dealing with. Well, I'll be honest, this is normally the road I take home, and it's gonna take me way out of my way to go around. You sure I couldn't just... From behind his mask, the man gave out a sympathetic sigh. Sorry, man. I've got my orders. No one passes unless they're official personnel. But hey, it should be all clear like in a few days tops. Putting my truck into reverse, I stuck out my hand, doing my best to put them all at ease, and keep the rifles pointed away from my head. Well, hey, thanks for letting me know. I'll tell the other guys at the rig, and we'll try to keep out of your hair. I appreciate it. Despite the mask over his face, I could see the ends of his grin as the soldier shook my hand, and the others relaxed, their guns staying pointed at the ground. Like I said, we'll be done in a few days at most, so if anyone starts getting riled, just let them know we've got this. Sure you do. I eased backwards into a U-turn and drove until I was well out of sight of the roadblock. As soon as they left my rearview mirror, I killed the lights and drifted into the grassy berm, coming to a stop with minimal brake squeal.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Taylor sat just on the outskirts of Collingswood in a small, unkept campground that was free to the public. It should have been a short commute, but the local police had been cutting off a lot of routes lately for seemingly no reason at all. However, these upgrades at the roadblock weren't the usual sheriff's deputies. I knew a few guys at the refinery who were ex-military, and the soldier at the checkpoint had the same polite but deadly mannerisms that told me I was dealing with professionals. Whatever was going on out here, they certainly weren't cleaning up a train derailment, especially since there was no train tracks near this road. Wonder what they need to hide so badly that they hire mercs. Pulling out my phone, I checked my maps app and scanned the spiderweb of small gravel roads around Collingwoods for an alternate route. Some of the roads looked so small that I wondered if they would be out of commission, as was the case with many of the neglected coal mining roads in this forgotten part of the Appalachian foothills. Of course, my pickup was four-wheel drive, and if the authorities thought that the road was impassable, then maybe they wouldn't have it guarded. But with dawn only an hour away at best, I'd have to be quick or risk being spotted in the daylight. There. My eyes caught a road called Bethesda Ridge that ran around a large chunk of land on the map labeled New Wilderness Wildlife Reserve. I'd heard a few of the locals in Collingswood talk about that place. How pretty it was in the daylight, full of exotic animals and blooming flowers. I'm not much of a flower guy, but always figured maybe someday I'd take a tour to see what all the fuss was about. There had been something in the news a few days ago about some guy named Richter being involved with a scandal connected to the park, but I never paid attention to it. At any rate, this road looked like it should be well maintained, and would only take me 5 minutes longer than my usual route. With any luck, I'd be back at my camper, squeaky clean and eating hot raviolis in no time. I followed the directions my phone reliably spat out, winding up and down steep inclines through narrow overgrown mining roads, and past farmhouse after dilapidated farmhouse. It depressed me how this area was so run down. The opioid epidemic really throwing the community for a hard loop. Part of me knew just by looking at the faded paint and sagging roof lines that these buildings had been beautiful once, but poverty, an indifferent government, and the unending flow of narcotics poisoned that beauty, turning it into something like a theme from some 90s analog horror movie.
Randy, tell me you're seeing this.
Swearing under my breath in surprise, I almost jumped out of my skin and stared at my shortwave walkie-talkie. We use them on the various work sites to communicate between crews, but I didn't recognize this voice. It was a young man and he sounded scared.
Yeah, I see him.
An older man's voice came through, low and rough, like he was whispering into his mic.
Hold fire until they get closer.
My curiosity spiked, and I slowed, still driving down the bumpy old coal road in the dark. Most people don't know, but even rudimentary shortwave radios sometimes experience a phenomenon called skip, where the right atmospheric conditions relay radio traffic from somewhere else. Sometimes traffic from different frequencies, channels, or even long distances. I've heard messages as far away as California before, so it didn't surprise me that I could get radio signals like this. Still, they were so clear, so loud, that whoever was talking had to be close by, within 20 miles at least.
My God!
A woman's voice came through, shocked and tense, as if she were watching a building full of children collapse.
There's so many, Randy. What do we...
Stay calm.
The old man barked back. And I got the feeling he had some background in police or military, with the way he seemed to take command of the situation.
Just stay put and conserve your ammo. We'll be fine.
Head cocked in confusion, I almost didn't look up in time, and slammed my boot down on the brake pedal. Mud slushed under the knobby tread of my truck tires, and brown fur blurred past my headlights. Stunned, I watched in wide-eyed fascination as no less than 50 white-tailed deer bounded across the decrepit road at full speed, not even paying attention to my rumbling truck. Birds darted overhead, not just owls and crows, but all manner of daytime birds as well. Pigeons, sparrows, songbirds, and even bats. Tens of thousands of bugs seethed over the dirt and the dark sheets of wriggling legs, parting to allow the stampede of possums, raccoons, red foxes, and even a pack of coyotes to flee past them like a tidal wave was hot on their tails. Neither stopped to attack each other, prey and predator running together, all with their ears laid back, limbs moving at breakneck speeds without a glance backward. What the? I had never seen animals act like this. Not once in all my travels across the U.S. Something seemed to have spooked them. Something bad enough that even the insects weren't hanging around to weather the storm.
Now!
Kaboom! Milliseconds after the old man's voice echoed through the radio, a bright flash lit up the horizon to my left, and a huge, fiery orange ball rose from behind the hills bordering the road. My truck rocked. The shockwave rippled through the ground even from this far away, and I ducked out of reflex. What the hell is going on here? My heart roared in my ear, and I pushed the accelerator to the floor, heaving through the horde of wildlife to fly down the dark road like a bat out of hell.
Take the next left.
The map app on my phone chirped in its neutral, pleasant female voice. And I drifted around the turn without even slowing down, spare sockets from my tool set rolling over the floorboard across my feet. Gravel pinged against the undersides of my truck cab, and the landscape opened up around me, more grasslands than trees. Flickers of orange light filled the sky, and the radio vomited a cacophony of human voices, all ranging to be heard about the hiss of static and faint echoes of what sounded like gunfire.
On your left! Phillips, watch out! Randy, we need help on the right side. My gun's jammed!
I swallowed, and dodged potholes as sweat trickled down my scruffy face. Being in the oil field, nothing much scared me after working around some of the scum the companies recruited. But now my pulse thudded against my thin flesh in my temple. My heart rammed into each rib like it wanted out, and the air constricted in my lungs. Above me, The grim clouds reflected seething red and orange flames. The gunshots became audible in spite of my rolled-up window, and I caught the rattle of a Kalashnikov rifle, along with the deep boom, boom, boom of a real-life M2 machine gun.
Take the next left, then proceed straight for 2 miles.
Yanking hard on the steering wheel, I rounded the bend and my jaw dropped. The gravel stretched on a long, back-and-forth, swerving path that was as straight as you could get for the most rural southeastern Ohio back roads. On one side, tall wire mesh fence lined the quiet ditches and grassy meadows, with a sign to my left, not 10 yards away, marked New Wilderness Wildlife Reserve. On the other side, a large open section of grassland stretched out into the distance, pot-marked by little tractor paths and clusters of short trees. A few ponds interspersed in between. I could see where, in the daytime, it would have been beautiful, full of multicolored wildflowers and flocks of butterflies. But it wasn't beautiful now. Fire chewed through the tall grass and slow-moving walls of hungry orange and red.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Seen sparks skyward and bathed the entire area in shifting shadows. Heavy gray clouds clotted the night sky, and I smelt burning rubber on the wind. Bright yellow muzzle flashes cut through the dark in the mist of the field, and a row of cabins burned on the other side of the plain, billowing back smoke rising like a pall of doom. Dug in across the field with their backs to the road, a thin line of people fought with desperate brutality. I saw Armalites and Kalashnikovs intermixed with bolt-action hunting rifles and shotguns, along with flaming bottles of gasoline and pipe bombs covered in taped-on nails. Explosions went off every few seconds. The improvised grenades tossed in waves, and one man shouldered what looked to be a homemade rocket launcher made from a fire extinguisher with fins welded onto it. The entire scene looked like the 4th of July on steroids. But the feral desperation of the fight told me this was no rifle range. These people were fighting for their lives. And I felt like I had stumbled into something awful, a horrible nightmare that wasn't meant for the outside world to see. And then, as I gripped my steering wheel in dread, through the tall grass, they came. Like lions throwing themselves at the herd of trapped gazelle, hunched figures loped forward, their shadows otherworldly in the light of the flames. Long, slender gray limbs ended in 3-fingered claws at each hand, the legs shorter than the distended forearms so that they ran like gorillas. Their muscled shoulders propelled them forward in frightening speed. They didn't have tails. Their skin, the texture of smooth birch bark, with twig-like extensions poking out from their warty elbows and spines like prehistoric spikes down their backs. Each creature's head was long and narrow, like a crocodile's snout, but with a crown of more branch-like spikes around the skull in a fan, and no eyes that I could discern. This can't be real. In an instant, The screams came through the glass of my truck cab, and cold, bone-chilling shrieks echoed across the wide fields. Not the pained, frightened squeal of an animal defending itself, but an ancient, hate-filled war cry that held no humanity in it whatsoever, repeated by dozens upon dozens of long-limbed predatory fiends. The roar of a diesel cut through the night, and I barely reacted in time to avoid T-boning a massive green combine that burst through an open gate on the left side of the road, its front blades whirling. Someone had wielded sharp angled iron all over it, and gleaming chains that had been bolted to the blades at the front, tipped with shiny bits of razor blades. Black exhaust gusted from its smokestack, and a young man with blonde hair piloted it from the cab, enclosed by a rebar cage, into the brushy field.
"I'll clear the right side,"
a man called through the radio sitting in my cup holder.
"Jamie, you take the left. Let's go wrap 'em up. Wrap 'em up."
Behind the combine came a big yellow backhoe, also covered in spikes and rebar, with long rubber hoses running from the oil drum mounted on the back to a flaming nozzle affixed to its iron bucket.
"Right behind you."
The girl's voice crackled amongst the chatter, and the two machines diverged to swing around on either end of the lane of fighters, their tracks and tires churning up the muddy ground like mechanical dinosaurs. Even from my speeding truck, I heard the impact of the first creatures being mowed down by the combine, its blade and chains ripping into flesh and bone with vicious fury. Opposite it, the backhoe moved its craned arm like the neck of some giant monster and spewed bright yellow flames onto the onrushing horde of pale beings, lighting up the field for hundreds of yards around them. Dozens of mutants fell, either burned or diced to pieces, and the ground shook with the triumphant roar of the diesels. The sickly sweat stench of burnt flesh filled the air. Machinery clanged and banged, and the guns roared with chemical delight. Pained creatures from the bizarre creatures echoed, and above the gunfire, a cheer rang out from the line of people.
"Bill, get out of there!"
the girl called Jamie cried over the radio. In an instant, the triumphant moment turned to chaos as a creature jumped almost 20 feet into the air and landed like a cat atop the combine. The iron spikes sank deep into the already bleeding feet and hands and ripped into the rebar around the cab with abandon. Metal squealed, bent, and then sheared off as the glass of the cab shattered. A man's scream briefly pierced the radio static, and the combine was overwhelmed, tipped onto its side by a wave of snapping monsters.
"Fall back!"
The old man's shout came through the radio, even as I watched a figure that may have been him continue firing the M2 into the onrushing waves of creatures.
"Fall back to the ridge!"
"Whoa!"
A white pickup truck lurched into the roadway, and I locked up my brakes to slide around it. A chestnut-haired girl around my age sat at the wheel, blood running down her forehead, with a black polo shirt on. In the bed stood an old man with glasses and gray hair, gripping the handle of a .50-caliber machine gun, its barrel cherry red with heat. Others streamed across the road in full retreat, all in black shirts with the New Wilderness logo on the front, and they all dragged wounded comrades away from the burning field. My truck ground to a stop on the side of a dirt embankment not 5 feet away, stalling from the sudden downgrade in RPMs. The people in the white truck blinked at me in shock, and I stared right back, both sides seeming confused as to why the other was there.
"What are you doing?"
the old man astride the .50-caliber shouted, and waved at me as if I was an airplane attempting to land in the wrong airport.
"Get out of here! Go!"
Jerked back into the present by his raspy command, I scrambled at the ignition,
the stubborn motor choosing this moment to chug, chug, chug instead of fire. Horrid reptilian chittering clicked nearby, and I whimpered like a trapped puppy, terror seething through my mind. Jamming the stick into reverse, I punched my boot to the gas pedal. The transmission whined, my tires spun, and a sinking feeling ran through my guts. I was high-centered, my wheels caught on either side of the bank, the dirt lodged underneath my truck chassis holding me in place. It didn't matter if I had four-wheel drive or not if my wheels couldn't get purchase. I was stuck. Wham! My world lurched sideways as a massive fist had slammed into the cab of my beloved pickup. Gravity inverted, the seatbelt dug into my chest, and broken bits of glass sprayed across my field of vision. Everything seemed to move in slow motion, and I watched spare sockets and old candy bar wrappers and my handheld radio float in the air in front of my face. Crash. Reality snapped back like a gunshot, and the mutilated Ford rolled down into the ditch of the opposite side of the gravel road. I looked down at the cab ceiling, my arms hanging suspended from my shoulders, and registered a metallic taste in my mouth. Well, that's not good. Somewhere across the road came the dull thud of a heavy footstep, and I turned groggily to see what it was. The creature stood not yards away, tall as a horse, and its crocodilian eyeless head swiveled from side to side, tasting the air. Red blood glistened on its dagger-like yellowed teeth, bared in the firelight, and a long black serpentine tongue flickered in and out rhythmically. Something about its gray, sinewy form echoed into my head, stirring a part of me I hadn't known existed. I had been scared before as a little kid when my mom would get crazy about her drug habit. I'd been scared on the streets when the older boys tried to sell me to some homeless guy. And I had been scared the day one of the men on our rig down in New Mexico came to work with an axe and killed four people. This was different. This was something else. Something deeper. A primal, instinctual fear. One older than engines, skyscrapers, and radios. A fear born on instinct. The fear of prey when it sees its predator. Jerking its head around, the creature seemed to lock onto me, as if it could smell the terror seeping from my pores and opened its marrow jaws to reveal row after row of jagged, steak knife-sized teeth. It roared a colossal prehistoric sound that made the skin on my arms crawl with dread. I gotta get out. I thrashed, clawed at my seatbelt buckle, my sweaty fingers slipping and sliding over the metal button. Both my lungs felt like they were too small to get enough air, and all the blood rushed to my head in a wave of panic. A shadow fell over me, and I whipped my head around. Foul breath reeked from the torn flesh of 100 corpses blasted my face. The open maw of the creature right outside my window. Thick gooey strands of saliva threw little rainbow reflections in the light. And the teeth that poked out from the matted gray gums held bits of flesh and clothing stuck between them. A broken shoeless wound around one like a stuck noodle. I could see right down the dark cavern of its throat. And it almost resembled the inside of a rotten log, bumpy and grooved with black flesh instead of rosy pink. I watched as the teeth headed right for my exposed face. Bam, 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 bam! Letting out a howl of pain and anger, the monster staggered back, and dark black spots appeared on its bark-like hide. Smaller silhouettes dashed into the firelight, their guns spitting little streams of flame, while the heavy machine gun thundered on behind them. My mind still spun in horrified confusion, and I hung there motionless as the creature tumbled to the ground in a twitching heap. "Hurry up! Grab my hand! Let's go!"
One of the men in the road dumped several more rifle rounds into the head of the fallen beast. His comrades scuttled towards my truck. A muscular form crouched outside my window, and a man leaned in, about my age, with close-cut black hair and bloodied lip. "Hey, you still alive?" "So far." Blood surged in my skull, giving me a headache, and I shouted to be heard above the hammering of the big gun just outside. "My belt stuck!" A steel knife blade flashed in the dark, and I plummeted to the cab ceiling, barely managing to break my fall with both arms outstretched. Someone grabbed me by the collar and dragged me out into the wet grass. "Get up, man! We can't stay here!" I got to my feet and scurried with the rest of them for the white pickup truck, spent brass casings sliding under my boots like marbles. All around me, the creatures devoured anyone they caught up with, and it seemed the guns never stopped firing. The night sky filled with smoke from the fires that raged across the open grass fields, and screams of torment from dying people rang in my ears. Driving over the side of my rusty truck bed, I huddled down behind the low wheel well, and the vehicle lurched away from the hill, plowing through a set of reinforced gates at the top. The instant I saw the barbed wire top swing shut behind us, I sat up and the breath stuck in my chest. A crudely built log wall surrounded a cluster of single-story buildings with a large asphalt parking lot in the center. Four towers stood at each corner of the fort, two looking like they had been used for zip lining at one time, and the other two likely built the same time as the wall, made from dented red shipping containers stood on end. From every direction, people carried green ammunition cans, dragged stretchers with wounded on them, or rushed to man the ramparts of the wooden palisades with all kinds of weapons in their arms. Many were young, likely no older than their early 20s at best, their faces sheet white with fear. What the hell is this place?
"Darren, grab some gloves and help Richard get this gun on that wall!"
Barking at the top of his gravely smoker's voice, the old man waded through the sea of hot brass casings in the truck bed and leaned down to offer me a hand up.
"On your feet, son. No time to waste."
What's going on?
"Phyllis, grab some ammo and top everyone off."
Oblivious to my sputtered protests, the old man jumped down from the truck bed and continued pointing people to their stations.
"David, get on the radio and tell the martyr crews to start laying hate. Sean, find this guy a gun and check on Carter's men."
The dark-haired guy who had pulled me from my Ford jumped down from the truck and gestured for me to follow him.
"Come on, this way."
Confused and terrified, I ran after him, dodging five girls in blood-stained clothing who ran to carry a wounded man back into a long rectangular building to our left, with a sign marked New Wilderness Visitor Center beside the doorway. We ducked through the door, then down a narrow hallway to the left, and the man named Sean pushed open the door to what looked to be a storeroom. Green ammo cans were stacked to the ceiling, with black plastic crates on the side marked Medical and a mostly empty weapons rack bolted to the brick wall. Various bits of vests, holsters, and tactical gear hung from the hooks beside the ammunition, and a row of black gas masks dangled next to them.
"Did a doomsday bunker explode in here?"
"You know how to shoot?"
He tossed a woodland camo-patterned bandolier at me. The pouch is already filled with gray steel magazines, and yanked one of the few remaining rifles from the weapons rack. Wide-eyed with stock, I blinked down at the web gear in my hand.
But what's going on?"
Sean pushed the gleaming black rifle into my arms and held my gaze with wild, bloodshot eyes.
"I don't have time to explain, all right.
If you want to live, follow me and do exactly as I say. Got it?
Woof, woof.
Outside, the dull roar is something like a propane cannon split the air, and Sean grabbed a few more ammunition cans before he slipped past me out the door.
Come on, the martyrs are up. We've got to reinforce the left flank, or the freaks will be inside the wire. Put your stuff on, man. Let's go!
Running while pulling a poorly adjusted chest rig on provoked to be nearly impossible, so I slung the morass of nylon over one shoulder, gripping my rifle as we sprinted through the courtyard. We passed two circular sandbag pits, manned by a couple scrawny teenagers who feverishly dropped homemade rockets into a couple of green-painted steel pipes, dirt flying with every shot. Eerie roars echoed just on the other side of the wall, returned by the fighters atop the ramparts pouring in lead at the beasts without pause. The crack of rifles blending into the never-ending wave. The stench of coppery blood and acrid gunpowder filled the air, along with pillars of black smoke from burning fuel bombs. Medics staggered around the yard, some of them girls who looked no older than 16, pressing white gauze to spurting wounds, and leaning over their wounded patients to shield them from dust kicked up from the martyrs. It was absolute bedlam, and all I wanted to do was find something solid to crawl under.
Carter!
Sean charged up a set of steps and into a log pillbox built atop the leftmost corner of the wall.
Ammo!
Inside, a few older men with silver in their hair and beer guts beneath their weather-worn army fatigues snatched up the ammunition cans from Sean, empty magazines covering the floor around them. Despite their bulky physiques, I got the impression from how they moved that these men had worn those uniforms before, in a different time, when they had darker hair and slimmer waistlines. Looks like a VFW meeting on cocaine. One of the men, a thinner guy with a short gray ponytail and Viking-style beard, crouch-walked over to us.
"Where's the 50?"
he shouted. The incessant bam-bam of guns enough to make my ears hurt.
"Randy said it to the front gate!"
Sean howled back and jerked his thumb at himself and I.
"Where are your reinforcements?"
The gray-haired man pointed to his right, through the firing slit of the little fighting position.
"Dawn's not far off. We just gotta hold him off until then. Pick a spot and get to work."
Sean scuttled to an open spot at the firing line, racking the charging handle of my rifle with clammy fingertips. I flicked the safety switch off and peered down the dimly lit iron sights into the darkness. Dear God. There had to be close to 200 of them, surging over the burning field past the fallen combine and up the slope to the walls in fluid, deadly speed. Like ocean waves, they rolled forward, dozens upon dozens, a never-ending tide of long-limbed, reptile-faced monsters, with wood skin that seemed to eat bullets. Without fear, they threw themselves at the wall, oblivious to the danger, almost immune to the pain. Driven by an insatiable urge to rip and tear, their ancient battle roars enough to chill me to the bone. I blinked and caught sight of one as it crawled up an incline of its dead fellows, reptilian teeth bared, moving so fast it was almost a blur. Placing the front sight post over its bark-like hide, I pressed the trigger over and over. The rifle buckled in my arms obediently. Gunfire from our position peppered the oncoming monster, and it fell with an agonizing shriek less than 30 yards away, black blood oozing from dozens of wounds. In my hands, the smoking rifle yawned with an empty chamber, and I ducked down to reach for a fresh magazine. Just before I could reload, however, something in the distance caught my eye. Pinpricks of light flickered in the far tree line, yellow sporadic flashes that looked vaguely familiar. It occurred to me that the beasts outside weren't fleeing from the gunfire, even as we mowed them down, almost as if they had nowhere else to go but run through the hail of lead. By all accounts, they should have turned tail and ran for the woods like any other animal. But why weren't they? Squinting hard, I focused on the lights, and something inside my brain clicked. Muzzle flashes. They were concealed just inside the cover of the dark pines. As many as 60 more guns firing into the herd of crawling nightmares. But they weren't moving in to help clear the beasts from the fort walls. Instead, they stayed where they were, turning any stray monsters that tried to escape away and sent them lumbering towards our position. They're hurting them. They're hurting them right to us. The tree line! I snapped Sean's arm until he stopped firing and pointed to the distant gunfire. See that? There's guys over there. Sean yanked a black handheld radio from his chest rig and clicked the talk button. Marksman, hit the trees. I repeat, muzzles flashes in the tree line. Hit 'em hard. I pressed the trigger several times in the general direction of the flashes, emptying mag after mag in an effort to keep both the monsters and the mysterious human instigators at bay. Others on the ramparts with scoped hunting rifles seemed to be having better luck, as cries of, "Got one!" and "I hit him!" echoed from every position. One by one, the flashes started to fade out, either due to retreat or the marksmen finding their target. A soft warmth tickled my left cheek, and I turned to see the sky begin to lighten, the first long ray of sunshine slipping over the dark horizon. Dawn. Cheers went up from all down the line. With the unknown attackers in the tree line suppressed, some of the monstrous creatures turned from the tide of lead and made their way for the forest. Their flight started a rout, as more creatures followed like a flock of birds, and soon, the last of them disappeared into the trees at the far side of the scorched grassland. The gunfire started to slacken off, and I slumped down with my back to the wall beside Sean, the two of us grinning with relief.
Not bad, newbie.
He leaned his steaming rifle against the wall to cool off and stuck out a hand.
Sean Hammond.
Ethan. I shook it, heart still racing, and set my own rifle on the floor, waves of heat rising from its now purple barrel. Ethan Sanderson. He pulled out a small flask and unscrewed the cap to offer it to me.
Well, Sanderson, cheers. You didn't die.
Glad to know that's a celebratory accomplishment out here. With my limbs shaking from the adrenaline wearing off, I cast back my head to gulp down some of the burning amber whiskey. What were those things? Sean climbed to his feet and gave me a hand up.
Birch crawlers.
They usually don't cluster into super packs that big unless they're hunting or threatened. I figure we have Sheriff Warnoff to thank for that. My eyes widened, and I stared out into the gutted battlefield, trying to count the bodies and failing miserably.
Warnoff? Our Warnoff?
I don't get it, man. Why would the cops do something like this?
That's exactly what I asked the sheriff.
Sean's face hardened into a firm frown. Right before he tried to blow my brains out. They've been lying to us, all of us, for years. My blood ran cold at the way he said that, but I refused to lose my cool. So, what do we do now? Picking up his rifle, Sean slung it over one shoulder and scratched at his stubble beard with a yawn.
Well, I'd say it's about breakfast time, wouldn't you?
Might as well get comfortable, Sanderson. Looks like you're going to be here for a while, since Warnoff and his men are still out there. Too relieved to be alive, and confused by the deluge of strange events that I witnessed, I shuffled out of the pillbox into the early morning breeze. Groans from wounded and dying fighters rose through the air, many of the nurses weeping and wailing as more of the critically injured began to die from blood loss. Most of the gunfire ceased, only a few of the fighters still finishing off wounded birch crawlers with merciless hate. In the creeping daylight, a carpet of dead monsters laid piled up against the palisade wall, some so high I could have reached over and touched their still twitching claws. They had gotten close, too close, and I realized that my death had clambered within a few feet from me more than once this night. How these things even existed, I still don't know. It made no sense to me. None of it. Hey, new guy. I looked down to see a chestnut-haired girl waving from beside a metal oil drum, a fire burning in the center of it. Soot and exhaustion lined her face, but it still bore a soft, friendly smile. You frozen up there? Over. It was over. At least for now. And that was all that mattered. I survived my childhood. I survived the streets of Pittsburgh. If I could do that, I figured, then this strange park was no different. Just like before, I would take it one day at a time. I'd get some food, scrounge more ammunition, and see if I could find some decent cell phone service. Maybe the girl by the fire would lend me her phone. It'd be a good excuse to get her number. You know, it's kinda pretty here in the daytime. Taking a deep breath of crisp morning air, I shouldered my rifle and made my way down the wooden rampart steps, the smell of wood smoke in my nose and the echoes of guns still ringing in my ears.